Bonjour.
All right, so yes, I've been associated with the Space Association, but not for 36 years, for about 4 years, and very happily so. The Space Association has been instrumental in helping me put two of my interests together, that of space and that of psychology. So as was said in the introduction, I'm a registered psychologist, but I happen to be a person who's also interested in space. I love the idea of going into space, hopefully one day, like everybody here, I would imagine, seeing the world spinning in space. I think it just gives such a good perspective of where we really, really are in the world. So that's how I come to being here. I promised the speech, I think, about 4 years ago, but we finally got it together. Okay, but I've been to quite a few meetings when I was living in Melbourne. I'm pleased that we've got Diane here, who's one of the Mars One people, so that maybe there's some contribution. We've also got an intern psychiatrist and a psychologist, another psychologist. And, of course, everyone here are humans. All right. Now, in terms of psychology and space flight, it's interesting to know that psychologists don't only deal with mental health issues in terms of when something is an acute issue. So they also make contributions to human welfare in such diverse areas as environmental design, such as the architecture, ideas for the architecture of the spaceship, because of course if we design a spaceship where people can be happy in and interact with each other happily, it's really helpful in having a long duration space flight. That can help with problem solving, decision making, leadership, and group performance. But many people strongly associate psychology with mental illness and long-term psychotherapy. So in this case, we're not just using psychology as counseling sessions, we're using it to help the astronauts function as individuals and as people in a confined environment for a long period of time. So we're going to go a little bit about the history, the crew as individuals, the crew as a group, and we'll talk about the crew and their families, and also the crew and ground control. So I felt that those were some good areas for us to discuss. So a little bit about the history of space exploration. So it's actually about 20, 30 years old in terms of the research and using psychology in space, 23 years behind medicine in general and research in general. It is also about 20, 30 years old as an idea of using psychology in space and for the astronauts. It's not only about astronaut selection, it's about pre-flight and post-flight and in-flight. And at the moment, the psychology that's going on there, the astronauts are actually very, very happy to have it. At first, they actually did not like it at all, became hostile, but now they realize no one was grounded and we need to have all the research. It's also done anonymously, so if research comes back and says something about what a commander said, well, there's six commanders, say, for instance, in the research project, and it's got to have been one of them. The 1998 Committee of Space Biology and Space Medicine made a few recommendations. So that was quite a big time in the industry. Now, their recommendations were that we needed, that we had to realize the effects of physical and psychosocial environment on the spacecraft, on cognitive, psychological, and affective measures of behavior and performance, the developmental and evaluation of countermeasures for mitigating adverse effects of the physical and social environments on individual and group performance, and in-flight studies of the characteristics of sleep during long-duration missions, ground-based studies of change and stability in individual psychological patterns, the effect of the individual differences on cognitive, psychophysiological, and affective measures of behavior and performance, improved methods of assessing interpersonal relations, crew compatibility, and improved training of the psychology and social adaptation to space. The effects of crew composition and crew tension, cohesion, and performance. Factors affecting ground crew communication and interactions and conditions that affect the distribution of authority, decision-making, task assignments between space crews and ground control. So there was a lot in that, but that's just to show you what has gone on in the past, and it's also a basis of the things that I'm going to discuss today. One of the big things that also happened is the in 2008, the Monitor, which is a psychology magazine, featured an astronaut drifting into space with the tranquil blue Earth in the background and the caption, deep psych space below. So that was one of the crucial moments where psychology and space exploration came together. It's also good to know that in history, well, not pleasant to know, but the Challenger and Columbia crashes were due to organizational behavioral issues and miscommunication. So it's very important that we look after the humans that are in space, because it's not just space payloads, it's people going up there. In 2001, the National Academy of Science published the Safe Passage into Space. And that also shows you how we need to look at humans from a medical perspective and from an allied medical perspective and just in general the human perspectives. So this has been going on for a while, but not as long as some other professions. I'm very pleased to have brought space psychology or be talking about space psychology in Australia and bringing the idea of space psychology here. All right, before we carry on, we need some astronauts. Okay, now Diane's not going to Mars yet because this is not about the long... we're going to have you on the spaceship, but this is not about long-duration missions. What we're doing... Well, it's long-duration missions, but not as far as Mars. It's more... What we're talking about today is more about the International Space Station that far away. Mars is another whole topic. All right, so the crew as individuals. Let's look at it from that level. First, we need to talk about the right stuff. Now, the right stuff has changed through the years. For example, Neil Armstrong, who was a self-confessed nerd, it was all about the task. Being able to go up there, focus, get to the moon and back safely. These days, we need a little bit more social interaction. We're on the space station for a longer period of time. So how do we do that? We've got to teach that and teach the social interactions. And we've got to select different crew. We've got to select crew who've got a lot of different things. Okay. So they need to be fit, intelligent, highly motivated, capable of venturing into dangerous areas. So that's more than just the task. There needs to be some resilience there as well. We're also looking at things like agreeableness, conscientiousness, and extroversion. Another thing to remember is that to keep our astronauts well, one of the things we need is windows. Not on the computer, but on the spacecraft. Okay. Now, there's no windows there on the spacecraft, but generally when we design the spacecraft, we need windows. And that's because of the well-being effect of them seeing the Earth. Now, when Diane goes to Mars, she's not going to see the Earth anymore eventually, which is going to make things much more complicated. But seeing the Earth has a very big effect on the crew, and they like to photograph the Earth, not only so that we can use it for conservation reasons, but for when they have their rest time and their downtime. And it has a very big impact on them. So this is where you get the disappearing Earth can become a big problem for the astronauts. But at the moment, that's not such a problem unless we're going further out than just where you can see the Earth. The Earth overview effect comes from conservation. For people who see the Earth, it has such a big, from space, it has a great effect on them. And when they bring that back to Earth, people feel like they need to conserve the Earth. Contact with family and friends is also very, very, very important to help keep the astronauts well. That contact with people that they know and care for is important. And that's something that we actually will talk a bit about later as well. When it comes to the individual astronauts, it's also interesting to note that when I saw Buzz Aldrin, one of the things he said is that we have ice in our veins. In other words, it's the ability to keep cool and carry on with the task. But of course, there still needs to be some emotional content if people are interacting with each other. Some of the problems that they might encounter is boredom, isolation, sensory deprivation of sleep, privacy, radiation, and more. So they need to be able to be people who are prepared to venture into dangerous environments. As they travel further out into space, it becomes more isolated and creates different problems or difficulties for the astronauts, such as longer communication times. So in terms of going to Mars, things will be more isolated, and the crews will have to do more on their own, and they have to change how they communicate with Earth. So they might send an email, but it will have various questions on them, not just one question, because it's going to take 20, 30 minutes or more to get a response. So a few questions, and then you get a response. The noise is something that is pretty big. It's 72 decibels constantly, which is the same noise that you hear when you're going at 100 kilometers an hour down a highway with the windows open. And normal lounge rooms, 42 decibels. So that's something else that they need to cope with. There's stress in being able to complete the tasks, because they're up there, they've got to do things on the spaceship, they've got to do their EVAs, they've got to do the science experiments, there's a lot going on. So as I mentioned before, they have training before the flight, and they can have debriefing after the flight. What they're doing now is during the flight, they're actually getting psychological questionnaires, and they're getting observed from Earth. So they're looking at affect, changes in facial expressions, changes in mood, changes in body language, tiredness. They're even monitored for things like heart rate, so that you can get a sense of where they're at and if there's stress, and then intervene. What you can get is the third quarter effect. So what you find is, when they start a mission, it's very, very exciting. We're going to go, we're going to get there. Halfway through, we are halfway, that's great. And then they realize, oh, but we've got another halfway to go. So it's especially then when you notice that they get extra stressed and symptoms of anxiety and depression can come up. So they need to be screened for that, and that's where psychology can help intervene. They can be told to crank the music up, put the lights on. They can get care packages from people on Earth with things that they like. And enjoy seeing decorations from the holidays, memorabilia, anything like that can be in their care package. The pre-flight training, in terms of social emotional skills, is very much like you would do with an organization. These days, organizations have training sessions where they can train people in things like conflict management. So it's very similar to that, what they do with the crew. And then, of course, when they come back, the debriefing, they come back to a totally different world. They've got to integrate back into the world. There's less routine, and they've got to integrate back into their families. Sometimes what you find is the families get on with things, and they do it all themselves. The spouses end up doing what they need to do, and then they have someone coming back in who's now going to be helping them. So that whole system needs to be assisted. And of course, the first people on Mars, for example, are going to come back to a hero's welcome, and they're going to be needed. They're going to need some support if they do come back to Earth, of course, because I think that the colonization there. But if they did, that's what it would be, quite a big thing. And if there's any communication with them, then we need help with that. So some of the things that they use to look at the stress of the astronauts is the profile of mood states. That looks at their tension and anxiety, depression and dejection, anger, hostility, fatigue, vigor and activity, confusion and bewilderment. So that's the crew as individuals. So we're choosing them well, and we're helping them when they are on this long flight. So the crew are not only individuals, but they need to be part of a group. These days, the people who are the commanders don't only have the effect of having to help them cope with the tasks, it's also having to support the crew. And the crew need the skills to interact with each other, like we mentioned before. We have multicultural crews. We have multiple gender crews. We have international crews. This can create big problems in terms of things like communication. People from different countries also have different food. They come about different languages, different ways of working. Even organizations like NASA, compared with the cosmonauts organizations and the astronauts organizations, in and of themselves operate very differently. So there's different expectations of these people in space from where they come from. And they work differently. So sometimes what they do pre-flight is not only the social emotional education, but also multicultural education. So sometimes they'll even go and stay with people on Earth who are from a different country that they're going to fly with, or go up into space with, so that they get an idea of those people. These days, there are so many other people going, such as military and commercial aviators, mountain climbers, divers, polar explorers, tourists, researchers, scientists. One of the big difficulties is being one of a kind. So if you're the only person of a gender, the only person from a certain country, that can be difficult. Something happened that was quite interesting is that the Americans visited the Russian space station Mir, and they came back and they coined the term red hand syndrome, because every time they tried to do something, they felt that they got a bit of a slap on the hand, not literally, by the Russians. So there's a bit of a difference in the way they work, and there's a host and visitor mentality. When we've got an international space station, it's very different because it's international. It's nobody's particular space station. That makes it very, very different. When we look at the group, we also need to look at group cohesion. How is the group going together? And if we monitor the group cohesion and we see that maybe during the third quarter or the second half of the mission, people are not getting on and group cohesion has gone down, people are not so motivated to work together or to interact with one another, we can intervene. So group cohesion looks at communication, conflict, potential for conflict, trust, teamwork, effectiveness, leadership, and learning. So psychology has a part in playing to keep the groups cohesive and helping them with their interactions. There was a study done, I think it was in 1996, where they put two simulations of two spacecraft, and they got volunteers to go in there for a weekend, and they made it very much like a real space flight. It was a very good simulation. They even lifted the hatches at one point, and you saw Earth. The group who got training as to how to interact with other people, compared with the control group, had a much better experience. They both enjoyed their holiday in space, but they were much better at the experience. When it comes to the crew and ground control, things can happen that are very interesting. There's a psychological term called displacement. Now, on Earth, let's see, if you typically the story's told, you cross with your boss, but you can't get angry with your boss and tell him off, so you come home and you kick the cat. Now, you can't do that in space. You've got to stick together. In fact, in space, there's nowhere to go if you're not happy with it, someone. So who do you get cross with? You get cross with ground control. So you displace the anger or the unpleasant emotions onto ground control. And then it comes out as ground control are not doing what they need to do. Where's our plan for what we're supposed to do today? This plan is not working. And it's ground control that are doing things wrong. So then we can help intervene and work out, is ground control not doing their job? Or is this displaced anger or emotions? So it can be a perceived lack of support from ground control, not necessarily a real one. We also need to give from the ground continued support throughout the mission. And this can be from family and friends, but also from ground control. Some people have to do more reporting, like Russia has to do more reporting to ground control than the Americans. As you get further out, more towards Mars, there's less reporting. So overall, it's interesting that why do people want to go into space? What do the astronauts get besides the obvious to going into space? Why should they go into a dangerous environment besides to explore what else is out there in the universe? Well, they report positive stress, that it's good for camaraderie, professional growth and improvement, personal growth and improvement, satisfaction, enjoyment. Their values even change, and they become reflective. So they really gain a lot from going up there. The crew and family and friends. So the best analogies for the analogs that we use to compare space to on Earth are submarines. So in fact, one of the bits in the history is they would use submarine missions, the research done from submarine missions, and extrapolate that into space missions. It's also, so you've got something then called submarine wives. They used to all group together and support each other. So the same thing can happen with the family and friends.
They need to be supported before the mission, and they need to help support the astronauts and be supported themselves during the mission and after the mission. They're very helpful in being used in terms of calls to astronauts, sending the care packages up and putting those together. And we can't ignore the support that they need, because we don't need any friction in the families because the astronauts have gone up. Like military families, they've gone for a long period of time and they need support with that. Through emails, gifts, calls, and personal items in the care packages. That's the content of what I have.